Hi, I'm Rochelle Carey, filling in for Femi Okay. Today on the stream, a look at the escalating conflict in Ethiopia. And if you are in Ethiopia, we want to know, how have you been impacted by the conflict in Tigray and beyond? And you can add your comments, your questions for today's panel right there in our chat, live on YouTube. This month, Ethiopia marked 1 year of civil war. Last week, Ethiopia's government declared a state of emergency and called on citizens to defend the capital city. Now, this conflict, which started in the northern region of Tigray, has spread to the neighboring states of Afar and Amhara. Rebel Tigrayan fighters are now moving south towards the capital and have so far claimed control over two cities north of Addis Ababa. Now, with this conflict is a worsening humanitarian crisis in northern Ethiopia. Let's talk some numbers now. The World Health Organization says 5.2 million people are in dire need of humanitarian aid. 2.1 million people are displaced. 400,000 people are close to famine. And access to these affected areas, that remains limited. So what is next in Ethiopia's war? Joining us today from The Hague in the Netherlands, Adem K. Abebe, a commentator and advisor on Ethiopian affairs. In Oakland, California, Isaias Halamarian of the Global Society of Tigray Scholars and Professionals. And in Nairobi, Kenya, William Davison, a senior analyst on Ethiopia for the International Crisis Group. Thank you all for joining me. We appreciate it. Isaias, I want to start with you. These reports that the TPLF may be marching toward Addis Ababa, do you believe that to be true? Is that what they're doing?
Thank you very much, Rochelle, for having me. Well, so first, I think before I begin, there are certain things to be clear, I think. So I disagree with calling the TPLF this wrong narrative. TPLF is a political party, and this resistance is a popular struggle. So different political parties, different people, religion, age, every Tigrayan is resisting. So I think this is a popular struggle. And I think attributing the struggle to one political party is wrong. And I think the international media and the international community is taking that wrong. And I think I have to correct that first.
So wait, hold on one sec. So what you're saying is that there are other people that are not Tigrayan that are lined up with what this cause is. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So first, the struggle is a popular struggle in Tigray, not just the TPLF. TPLF is one of the leading parties, but other political groups in Tigray are also struggling. So this is a struggle by the Tigrayan people. It's a struggle. It involves like all groups in Tigray. So I would call it the Tigray Defense Forces or a popular struggle. So that's what I want to correct. And the second, the struggle is not it's just a Tigray struggle alone. Ethiopians in general are struggling. So the Tigray forces are united with other marginalized group, and they're marching towards the capital, and that's correct.
Adem?
May I jump
sure,
in here?
Sure, sure.
There's two things. I think Isaias is right that it's not the TPLF alone, but we know that the TPLF were the leading government at the time the TPLF army attacked National Defense Forces. So the TPLF is the heart of the resistance that is happening at the moment. So I think it's not inaccurate to call it TPLF. And secondly, I think to also say that it's a nationwide resistance is an extreme exaggeration. It's principally, the conflict is principally led by the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front. Of course, there were already smaller armed groups, insurgents here and there, but they have been there. But at the moment, the principal and most of the conflict remains in the northern part of the country.
So,
Isaias,
just a moment. I want Will. Yes, Will.
Yeah, if I could just come in here and put this back to Adem. I think, you know, what Adem says is reasonable. So the TPLF was the ruling party of Tigray, and it was a very, very dominant ruling party. And then Tigray regional government fell into civil war with the federal government after a constitutional electoral dispute. But you know, when people talk about the Tigray Defense Forces or this being a popular struggle and being something beyond the TPLF, well, one of the things that does is it takes this potentially away from classifying the entirety of the Tigrayan people who participate or support this struggle as terrorists. Because as Adam well knows, in May, the federal parliament classified the TPLF as a terrorist organization. So this insistence on describing what is, as we understand it, quite a popular struggle, a large proportion of Tigrayan society seems mobilized this armed struggle. The insistence on classifying them as TPLF means that you're classifying all of them as terrorists. And you know, that's not accurate.
Hold on, let Will finish, and then Isaias, you can.
We're seeing this mass, you know, roundup of Tigrayans in the capital, elsewhere, lots of suspicions for Tigrayans for supporting the rebellion and for being collaborators. And that's also partly due to this categorization of essentially anyone who's involved in this popular struggle as TPLF. But it would be very interesting to hear Adam's response on that.
One second.
I'm going to let Adem respond just because Will specifically said something he said, and then I promise I'll come back to you. Adem?
So two things. First, there are Tigrayans that are actually part of the coalition that is trying to fight the government. And in fact, as you may know, the Minister of Defense, the current Minister of Defense, is a Tigrayan. And the interim administration that was administering Tigray at the time the federal government was in control of the region was also composed of Tigrayans, including political parties that were excluded by the TPLF. In fact, one of the things that the TPLF did when it controlled Mekelle back was attack some of these Tigrayans that were working as part of the interim administration as traitors.
Will, just a moment.
Okay, so thank you very much. So I think we have to correct the narrative first. That wrong narrative would lead to a wrong conclusion. So first, the TPLF is a political party. The struggle is a popular struggle. I think we're agreeing on that. Rebel, there's also a wrong reference to the struggle as a rebel. This is totally wrong. The regime in the center betrayed Tigray, terrorized millions of Tigrayans, rebelled against the popular will, conspired with the foreign country, Eritrea, and invaded Tigray, and ultimately dismantled the constitutional orders. And I believe the word rebel perfectly fits with the regime, the Ethiopian regime. So we have to agree on that first. Why we end up here, I think that's the most important question to ask. The man who won the Nobel Peace Prize, a person who did a PhD in conflict resolution, turned out to be an entrepreneur of war and invests in conflict. And I think this is embarrassing and very appalling. But he's just a Trojan horse of the group that aspires unitary and single political narrative. So Abiy is just a person who is a Trojan horse of the
Let's all take a breath. Okay. And you brought up the prime minister. I actually want to play something that Abiy Ahmed said, specifically because we're talking about the TPLF and how they're spoken about. I do want to know what you think about the way he describes them. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
This pit, which is dug very deep, will be where the enemy will be buried, not where Ethiopia disintegrates. We will bury this enemy with our blood and bones and make the glory of Ethiopia high up again.
Okay, he's also referred to the TPLF as a cancer, as rats, as weeds. And Will, you touched on the fact that there have been reports of ethnic Tigrayans being rounded up in Addis Ababa. What do you make of the prime minister, a former Nobel Peace Prize winner, using this type of language? What is the real life impact of that?
I think it connects to the point that I was making before.
Sure, and then we can answer my question as well.
The point is, I certainly wasn't saying that all Tigrayans are part of this struggle, but I was saying that by classifying everyone involved in the struggle as TPLF, you're classifying everyone as a terrorist. Now, the prime minister, you know, when they use this language, they say things like, the US officials, they called ISIS a cancer, this type of thing, right? But the cancer, you know, this weeds cancer, they say it's referring to a political party, to TPLF. Well, the same point remains. You've just classified anyone who's involved in this struggle for Tigrayan autonomy as TPLF. And then you're using this type of dehumanizing language against that political party that you've classified as a terrorist organization. So I think that has hugely problematic ramifications to the Tigrayan population at large. And of course, that's exactly what we're seeing in terms of the threats to Tigrayan civilian lives in Amhara cities, in Addis Ababa, including the state repression that we're seeing under what is a very sweeping state of emergency that's just been enacted. Now, as the fight gets closer to Addis, it's likely that this sort of repression and this sort of mob violence against Tigrayan civilians intensifies. So it's just an incredibly worrying situation, partly because of that dehumanizing language, combined with this very broad classification of who is or who isn't part of the TPLF.
So I want to play something.
Two things.
Quickly.
May I come in first, quickly?
Sure.
Yeah. So the first one is I think Will is right, and you are right as well. The kind of language that has been coming, particularly from the federal authorities, but also at times from the Tigrayan authorities, has been egregious. It's not fitting people that actually control political authority. But in terms of the emergency, we know that the country is in a state of war. So a state of war is a de facto emergency. And what is surprising is the fact that there has not been a formal state of emergency in the country for the last couple of months, because the country has been at war. And it's also right that the state of emergency has been abused. I think it has been used to profile particularly Tigrayans, particularly in Addis Ababa. But at the same time, we cannot deny that the TPLF has supporters across the country. It's a very coordinated, well-structured machinery. And part of the struggle to contain them must include detentions that may be necessary. But that cannot be used as a justification to engage in a form of collective punishment.
Mr. Adam, justifying detention of thousands of Tigrayans in the capital and in every part of the country for being members of TPLF is egregious. And I think this is very appalling.
The collective punishment is egregious.
Most of the people in the capital city, thousands of people are detained in different concentration camps. So I think justifying that is very, very... It's very sad, as EPFN, you're justifying that. So guys, I think that there are not some, a moment, that there are not some, a moment, Adam, support, a moment, TPLF initiative and should be taken responsible.
Okay, a moment. We do have a lot of people that want to get into this discussion as well. In particular, there's a PhD student and writer by the name of Tiklai Gebremichael, and he has some thoughts about what might come should the TPLF reach the capital. Let's listen to that.
I think the capital city will fall to the Allied forces inevitably, and that is because the Federal Army had been fundamentally destroyed in Tigray. And the reason the Tigrayans haven't already taken over the city is because they have been extremely careful in the Amhara region in how they advance to make sure that civilians aren't affected or infrastructure destroyed. And in terms of what must be done to end the carnage and the conflict, I think the international community must understand that this is a regime that is using starvation as a weapon of war and is now jailing Tigrayans in their thousands in retaliation. And it must be told to stop that. And the forces that are trying to bring about a lasting solution in Ethiopia, armed or unarmed, must be supported before it is too late.
Okay, so he referenced some of the accusations that have been made against really both sides, but against the government as well. And there was a recent joint investigation by the United Nations Human Rights Office and the Ethiopian Human Rights Committee that said both sides in this conflict, both sides may have committed violations that may amount to war crimes. Now, the prime minister said that he has serious reservations about the report, but he accepts it. And he said that this exonerates Ethiopia from accusations of genocide. Will, I want to come to you. I realize it's very difficult to know what's going on the ground. You know, there's a blockade. There's not a lot of talk of journalists being there. But this report that accuses both sides of being in the conflict, is that fair to say that both sides are equally responsible for the horrible things that are happening? Does that do a disservice to the people that are being affected to say that everybody's equally responsible?
Well, first of all, it's not both sides. It's all parties to the conflict. So the primary belligerence with Ethiopian federal military, the Tigray regional forces, the Amhara regional forces, and Eritrea's national military. Now, yes, you know, there was a fairly conscious effort, I think, in the report to list incidents of atrocities committed by all those sides. But if you look at the comments of, for example, Michelle Bachelet, you know, the UN Human Rights Commissioner, and she pointed to the fact that Eritrean and Ethiopian soldiers, so not the Tigray regional forces, were responsible for the majority of the crimes. But it is, of course, you know, important to focus on the crimes committed by all sides. And I think what the report did is, you know, solidify some of the findings that we know about in terms of massacres and this type of thing. You know, there have been very widely reported massacres by the Eritrean military at Aksum, for example. There was a videoed massacre by Ethiopian federal soldiers. We had incidents of massacres that were witnessed by you know, humanitarian workers. There was all sorts of evidence of atrocities in Western Tigray. The report mentions that 600,000 Tigrayans were forcibly displaced from there. And then we also know about the violence.
If I may come in.
Can I interject, Rachel?
Okay.
So as a member of the victim group, and I think I should explain this better. First, there are core principles of investigation. When you conduct independent investigation, there are principles. First, that the victims have to have trust and confidence in the process. There is no trust. Most Tigrayans abroad and Tigray, we don't trust the joint investigation at all.
So, well, I actually want to add something. I want to add something to what Isaias, I want to add something to what you're saying, because we've been trying to monitor the comments as well. We've had more than one comment from viewers on YouTube and on Twitter saying that it really wasn't an independent investigation, that when it's a joint investigation, it's not an independent investigation.
Exactly.
I think
so
it's important
to explain.
Adam, just a moment.
Let me finish. So first, we don't have any trust and confidence. As victim, we don't have trust. We don't trust the process. First, you have to trust and believe in the process. So there's no trust. There's no transparency. The joint investigation, we don't even know what the terms of reference are. We don't know the tour. And there's no institutional and personal independence of the process. The Ethiopian Human Rights Commission is funded and controlled by the Ethiopian government. Even the director, Dr. Daniel, is under the prime minister's payroll. No witness protection at all. There's no witness protection mechanism and the scope. So most of the victims in Tigray were not even interviewed.
Okay, let's get a dem in here.
Now, two things. So first is that the report is about incidents during a time frame when everything was happening in Tigray. So it's only logical that the violations that happened at that particular time were committed by the non-Tigrayan forces. That's one. Secondly, the violence actually started by the TPLF. They not only attacked the defense forces, which they at least justified as part of their security operations, but the largest massacre in this particular incident since the conflict started was actually committed by the TPLF.
I should correct Adam here. So from the preparation, coordination, and execution, the Prime Minister, the panel, and the Eritrean military have started the war. The war didn't start in November, actually. The war started in April 2018. So we have to agree on that.
Just a moment. Adam, go ahead and finish your point.
It's important that, one, the conflict was in Tigray, so most of the violations naturally were committed by non-Tigrayans. That's one. Second, the violence, including against civilians, was actually started by the TPLF. It started in Maykadra a few days after the conflict erupted, and hundreds of civilians were massacred by TPLF and its affiliates. Secondly, the cutoff period for this particular report was June, and since then, the conflict has moved out of Tigray. And since then, most of the violence, naturally, again, has been committed, reportedly committed by Tigrayan forces.
Let me ask Will. Hold on a moment. Let me bring Will into this. Will, I mean, I think the debate that we're having right now really gets to the question that I have, is it is very difficult to actually know what is going on the ground in the region. What do you know about what life is like for Tigrayans right now? What do you know?
Well, before I get to that, I think on this report, what we have is that, you know, it has done some extra documentation, and it could provide some accountability. But ultimately, because of the contested nature of the report, as you can just see from this discussion, it's actually going to do next to nothing to, you know, get us any further towards political consensus.
Exactly, which is why
when there's such strong Tigrayan allegations of bias against the commissioner against the institution.
Right, which is why I'm trying to pivot to what life is like for actual Tigrayans, because I agree, what you're seeing now isn't really going to doesn't serve people well. What do you know about what it is that they are going through?
I think
what's going on in Tigray is that the federal interim administration with the federal military withdrew from Tigray at the end of June. Since then, we've had no banking services, no telecom services, barely any electricity services, certainly no federally provided electricity inside Tigray. The aid and the trade was completely knocked out. Aid was reduced to one very indirect land corridor, which has been heavily choked by bureaucracy. So something like only 10% of the needed aid is getting through to Tigray. The farming has been interrupted by the war and by the looting. Hospitals and clinics have been destroyed. Other economic institutions have been destroyed, and that happened a year ago now. So it's an incredibly serious situation. We keep quoting this figure of 400,000 people in famine conditions. Well, that was in July. Since then, we've seen no resumption of trade. We've seen no serious medical supplies. We've seen no banking services. People are running out of cash, and they're running out of food.
Okay, so
very difficult. And I
all right,
just
so I want it, guys.
Before I get accused, obviously, in the areas where the Tigray forces have taken the war to, particularly in Amhara region, there has been another 500,000 people displaced, we think, and they are also living
guys, we're going to be at... We are about to be out of time, and we cannot have this discussion without talking about a way out of this. And I've got a couple of comments from people on YouTube. One saying Abiy's days are numbered. The other one saying the TPLF should be eliminated from all of Ethiopia. Guys, we're about out of time. You cannot give me long answers, but I want to hear from each of you. What do you see is the way out of this? Adem, you can go first. Quickly.
So one quick one. I think William is right. The humanitarian situation is not only inhuman, it's also not strategic. It does not make sense for the national government to not facilitate the return of services, the return of humanitarian access. If it's to prevent the conflict, it hasn't. So it's not only inhuman. I think it's strategically extremely short-sighted to not facilitate the humanitarian service. It's important. The report said they are not deliberately impeding it, but they are also facilitating it actively.
So quickly.
In terms of solutions, there's really no other way. There has to be negotiation. Both parties need to recognize that the grievances that each side has are real. So the reasons for the grievances may not be, you may question the reasons, but the grievance is real. And the only way to address those grievances, to engage those grievances, is through negotiation.
Okay, Esaias. Esaias is negotiation the way out.
And I think negotiation with criminals and it's an assault to human conscience. And as a victim from the victim group, I feel disappointed. Like Adam suggesting negotiation with a regime that committed crime. And I believe what should be done is the regime in the center assumed power legitimately, and the power expired a long time ago, back in 2019. So I think first,
but that's
the regime
not
that
accurate,
power
illegitimately
should be removed, and the prime minister assumed power through sham election. An election, U.S. and European Union and the international community,
and of course the prime minister would.
Enough, guys.
William. So, do you see negotiation as the way out? And I need to be clear that, of course, the prime minister would say that there was not a sham election. But what do you see as the way out? We're about out of time.
Broadly, we need to reset this transition, which has gone seriously off the rails, and that's through a process of inclusive political negotiation. The only way to stop the advance of the Tigray forces in alliance with the Oromo Liberation Army looks to be, some form of meaningful concessions, finally, from the federal government. The primary reason that the Tigray forces went on the offensive in July is to overcome what they call a siege on Tigray. The denial of those basic services, electricity, telecoms and banking, the choking of aid and the lack of trade for an already ravaged economy. The federal government needs to take meaningful action to lift the siege, and then everybody needs to fall on the Tigray forces
to show some restraint. We're out of time. We're out of time. That'll be the final word. William Davison, Esaias Halamaran, Adem Abebe, thank you very much. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for watching. Keep it here. We will see you next time.